Welcome back to the podcast. You know, today we're going to talk about my favorite topic. You know, it's really leadership, right? And where we are with emotional sobriety, mental sobriety, you know, consciousness, and really what we bring to ourselves as leader. Today we've got a PhD in leadership, Dawn Carter. She's going to really bring to us guidance and wisdom as a leader, the places where we mess up and how we don't access our ability to lead well because of some of the things we trip over. And I think her guidance and empathy and guidance and wisdom will give you a lot. So stick around and listen to this one. With that, Stevie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
You know, as we get into, you know, my favorite topic is really talking about leadership. And, you know, we really look at being a leader and what it means to be a leader and, you know, start to unwind leadership. You know, there are a bunch of places that we as leaders often have some mess ups, right? Some places where, you know, we need to, you know, kind of practice different skill sets. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, one of the things that is so hard as a leader, right, is you have to be all these things, right? You have to be productive. You have to manage your time. You got to manage people. You got to manage your calendar. You got to manage customers. Like, there's so much going on for leaders every given day. And one of the things that I think can trip us up and we can stumble over is our emotions and how those emotions are impacting our communication, how they're impacting our decision making, how they're impacting just our energy and how we feel about the day. And so I think while we spend a lot of time with leaders talking about strategic planning, goal setting, visionary leadership, I think we also need to spend a little time talking about, let's make sure our emotions are helping us, not hurting us.
It happens all the time. You know, there's the impact, my ability to impact people, right, as a leader, are really predicated on my ability for them to hear me. Yes. Right. As we look at that, right, we start to look at it and go, all right, you can hear us. But if I'm in an emotional state that either A is triggering me or B is triggering them, yep, right, because of some emotional state, I mean, that ends up really affecting my ability to be of clarity to somebody to create a place that we want to go. Right.
Yeah. You know, I always say to people, it doesn't matter what you say. It only matters what they hear. Right? I can say all the things I want to say. I can have all the perfect words planned out. But if they don't hear what I'm trying to get them to hear, then me talking was really a waste of my breath and a waste of their time. And I think we do that a lot. I think we focus as leaders on, okay, I got to talk about this, 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 and this. I got to say all these things. But are we really thinking about what are they taking away from this message? And are they taking the things we need them to take away? Right? So like one of the things I always tell leaders is, are you setting a goal for this conversation? Why are we even talking, right? Why are we here? Why are we having a conversation? Now, sometimes it could be because I'm supposed to make small talk and get to know my people because somewhere in a leadership book, somebody told me that. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. Connect with your people. That's still a goal. I have meetings with my staff where my number one goal is to just check in, know how they're doing, how is their life going? That is the goal. And since that is the goal, I can focus on making sure that at the end of that meeting, they felt that's what I did. They felt that that was accomplished. That's the message they heard. But sometimes we need to have a meeting that's about giving them feedback or talking about a client problem. Well, if we go in there without a goal, without a plan, it can happen that we end up talking about 50 other things. And then when we leave the meeting, what do they remember? Well, they don't remember the thing we really wanted them to remember, which means it was a waste of our breath and a waste of their time. So one of the things that gets in our way is those emotions. Like you said, if you're triggered, if I'm triggered, all of a sudden we may not be speaking the same language anymore. And we've really got to be aware of that if we're going to lead effectively.
Yeah, I notice myself that, you know, oftentimes I wake up and I always laugh, right? I got this brain guy in my head. I call him Fred, right? And Fred's kind of this, you know, kind of this jerk, you know, that you know, he kind of wakes up in the morning right before I do. And he starts poking at me. What about this? What about that? What about this? What about that guy? This guy's doing this over here. And I'll shoot that guy over here. I got to get this girl over here. Now, what about that guy? Right. And Fred's kind of poking at me. And I just noticed, you know, Fred's the one who kind of is always a holding the high watch, making sure that dinosaurs aren't out to eat me, right? Fred's always this voice that's trying to protect me. But, you know, he's kind of overgrown himself, right? Yeah, there's no more dinosaurs. I live in a world where there's no dinosaurs. But Fred's always, you know, kind of this watching for me. And I have right. to tune in to a place where I can be around people, because if Fred gets free, he'll ruin all kinds of stuff, right? He'll walk into a conversation and it's not very helpful to the people I'm trying to lead from Fred, right? Fred can be really disruptive. And, okay. you know, so that triggered state isn't always my best state, right? To be able to stay present with somebody, it's not usually from Fred.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And we all have that, right? I call it the negative committee. Everybody's got the negative committee in their head. It's a group of humans, a group of voices, or Fred, who tells you all the things that are going wrong, all the things that are about to go wrong, and all the things you should have thought about yesterday that are still going wrong. And if we let that voice or those voices start making us make decisions, start controlling our mouths and what we're saying, all of a sudden it's very one-sided and it's very negative and it's very emotional. And the truth is, while we are emotional beings and having emotions is part of the human experience, and I am not someone to say, leave your emotions at the door. I don't think that's possible. They're part of who you are. You bring them with you. But there is an element of saying, you know what, though? They don't necessarily need to be making my decisions for me. They need to inform me. They need to educate me. But they don't need to make the decisions. Because if I allow those negative voices to always be the ones making decisions, I will always play it safe. I will never take a risk. And I will probably say things that hurt other people in order to save myself, which usually is not a good thing to do as a leader.
Right. I mean, it's not necessarily, I always feel like I can't trust Fred, right? I can't trust that thinking. You know, Fred's always thinking of the most negative thing that happened, you know, from that point of view. And, you know, one of my friends calls it the itty bitty shitty committee. I got another one friend of mine, he calls it the Fruit of the Loom committee. Uh-huh. We have those voices in our brain, that voice that, you know, it came with us. It came, you know, with this Neanderthal brain, this, you know, in 40,000 years ago, when there were dinosaurs roaming the planet, waking up and making sure there wasn't a snake under a bed or a bear somewhere was probably pretty useful. But we kind of outgrown it a little bit. So as we get aware of that, okay, great. Fred's there. The voice is there, whatever the group's called, it's there. Now maybe I could stand back and just take it for what it is. All right. It's guiding me. So I think that's a good distinction to get to get to a place where before I enter the conversation with the people I'm leading, right, just make sure I'm not bringing that committee to the conversation.
Right. And I think one of the easiest ways to do that is what we call a pulse check, right? Pulse check, super easy. You and I, we can do it right now together. Okay. Yeah. For this?
I'd love to. Okay.
So scale of 1 to 10, how are you feeling today? Just think about it. How are you feeling today in this moment right now? Your feelings, your thoughts, your ideas.
Good. I'm feeling great. I'm in this moment of, you want me to answer? Want me to answer that, right?
Go for it.
I'm feeling good. I'm excited about you. I love the conversation we're having. Having a podcast with someone who really kind of opens up our thinking. So excited, a little nervous because we've got a camera on. I got a little bit of fear, a little bit of excitement, a lot of joy.
Put it on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being awesome, 1 being shitty. Where are you at?
I'm at a 8.5.
8.5. Great. I'm at about a 7, right? Okay. So what do we know, right? If we look at those numbers, what do we know? Anything above a 5 means smooth sailing. We can get through most conversations. We can handle most distractions. And that negative committee is not taking up a lot of space in our brain in this moment. They are not in control of our decisions. They're not in control of our mouths. We're doing okay because we're feeling good. But my assumption is at some point in your life, you've had a day where you felt like a 1 or a 2 or a 3 and you had a bad day. And when we have a bad day, isn't everything harder, right? Harder Absolutely. To send an email, yeah. right?
Well, my ability to be present isn't there, right? Because I got Fred going, the committee going on and I'm not present. Yeah.
Right. And so what happens to us a lot of times is we go through our day without ever taking the second. And it's literally, it didn't take you long to come up with the number. It takes your brain milliseconds to do this. But if you just stopped before every human interaction and just did that, how am I feeling? Scale of 1 to 10. Where am I at today? Right? Knowing that that number can change, right? Because you can wake up feeling a 3, but then you can have a great conversation with somebody and feel an 8. And then your mother-in-law can call and you can feel a 4, right? Like everything is different. We change throughout the day. But if you would just take the time to think of that before you open your mouth, before you interact with somebody, you would find that you have more control over what's about to happen. Because when our number is positive, we're like, cool, we got this. Now all of a sudden we have confidence and fun and joyful emotions. When that number is less than a 5, so we know, ooh, we're not in our best space, then I think we have two choices. We either A, say, you know what, if this is something I can reschedule, maybe I should. And that's something that I tell all my leaders. I give you full permission to reschedule something if you are not going to be your best human. If you are not capable of being your best human in this moment, reschedule it. Because to me, it's just as bad as being ill.
Right? Worse. I mean, look, when I'm in that triggered state, or I know that I'm going to enter a conversation or with somebody, you know, I had one yesterday. I was on a Jasper, Georgia, I was on a job site and had this site guy that was all mad on the phone. And he said, are you at the job site? I'll come over there right now and tell you in your face. And I'm like, Uh-oh, this is, you know, I got a real emotional guy coming over. He's angry, a little embarrassed, a little frustrated. And I walked in the bathroom, and I said, all right, Anthony, this guy's going to walk in. He's going to be on fire, right? What am I going to do to maintain, how do I stay conscious, right? How do I stay in a space of what I know is, you know, we're really creative beings, right? I know that we're really creative. Like, I know that one inside of me has this real creativity. Until I go unconscious, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where I lose my clarity, right? Where I get triggered or unconscious, however you want to describe that feeling of that place where I lose control of my, you know, and as a leader, I always feel like my job is to stay conscious and aware and open and to look at there's a billion ideas that I could bring to any problem, right? Like literally a billion ideas I could solve any problem. And when I'm in a conscious point of space, I know the universe brings those answers to me, but as soon as I go unconscious, I get the F-its, the mad, shut, the, you know, cursing and yelling, that fear kicks in. And like that portal of thought shrinks,
Right. And you can't think clearly. You can't speak clearly. And so one of the things we have to do is give ourselves permission that sometimes today is not the day for that conversation. I always say it this way. If it's a conversation I could schedule, then I can choose to reschedule it.
That's right.
Right? Are you still going to interact with people because they're just going to come to your office or whatever? They don't have an appointment. Of course, which is where the second part of this comes in, right? So if my number is less than a 5 and I cannot reschedule the conversation, I can't just decide to have it a different day, then I, as the leader, or I just as the human, need to say, you know what? I'm aware that that's what's happening. I'm aware it's not my best day. So the number one thing I can do in this upcoming conversation is listen more and speak less. Right? I'm going to speak things I don't mean when I'm not feeling good. So if I keep myself a little bit quieter, I'm less likely to screw it up.
Yes, Stevie, that happened. Like literally as this man came in, guns a-blazing, and you know, he's in the middle of a job site with all these people. He really talking. He stood over me by a foot and a half, you know, in his presence of like looking down at me, bop, 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 bop. And he just went guns a-blazing at me. And yeah, your people, bop, 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 they messed up. And look at that guy out there, and your landscaper's this, and your da, 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 this. And he was just, for me, like he was behind schedule. And what I know is that when someone's behind schedule or missing some commitment, there's a little shame and guilt in there. Yep. And they take it out. And how do I take it out?
His number was not a 5.
No,
his number was lower.
My judgment is he brought to the conversation a little bit of shame. A lot of times I know that men and I'll use myself as an example. When I'm in shame, I get angry. Right. And that's my fear kicks in. And I started, walking around with this whole song and dance. And I just had, I knew that about, all right, if I could just stay there, absorb what he's going to go at. All right, great. Yeah. Like, bah, 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 bah. And he went guns at me in the middle of this thing. And he had to show everybody he was going to yell at me because he was mad. And it was his my fault that he missed his schedule. I'm like, all right, let's get absorb that. And by the time we're done, right, the whole goal was to have him get to, all right, so what's going on and when can you get your work done? Well, our guys can't get there tomorrow, but they'll be there on Monday. Great. On Monday morning, will you be done by another day Monday? Great. We can live with that. Now, what do we need to do to make sure that we're ready for Monday morning? Great. We'll do this. And we walked around and we looked at a couple of things. And, you know, there it just feels like when I stay, when we do what you're talking about, listen, it felt a lot easier to be able to come up with some solutions together. Absolutely. It felt like it was a win-win for both of us.
It is. And I think what we have to remember about emotions is people who are in an emotional state. And by the way, it doesn't matter happy or sad emotions. Doesn't matter if they're positive or negative. When you are feeling an emotional way, the easiest way to get back to baseline, the easiest way to come to a more neutral setting is to let them get the emotion out. So if I'm encountering somebody who's bringing in negative emotions to me, the best thing I can do is be quiet and let them talk themselves out of their emotion. That's how it happens. Just like when somebody's super excited, right, about something and they come to tell you, they just go, they just go. The best thing you can do is just let them go. Let them talk. Don't interrupt. Let them go. And then when they get to their stopping point, now we're at baseline. Now we can have reasonable, logical conversation. But so often what happens to us is when somebody approaches, let's say we're having a good day, but somebody approaches us having a bad day, then we start defending. Our day is now triggered, right? Like you said, that's right. And then like now I'm trying to, no, let him have his moment. Let him get out everything he needs to get out and then be like, cool. So what do we need to do, right? Very easy. And I think one of the things that all leaders need to remember is that not only should you pulse check yourself to know where you are, you should pulse check everybody around you. And you don't have to ask them for their number. Now, I will tell you, on my team, we actually start every team meeting with a pulse check verbally, where I say, hey, let's go around. Where are we at today? Because it's as a team, that's a part of our culture, right? So I can't do it with just somebody I meet on the street, but as a team, I can do that. But with people you meet, even if you don't want to ask them their number, you can tell. Just be observant. Look at their facial features. Look at their body language. Give them a number. How are they feeling? And adjust yourself accordingly. Because here's one of the key pieces to this idea. If somebody comes to you at a 7, you can meet them at a 7. You can be below a 7, but you should never be a 10. Guys, if you meet somebody at such a higher level than they are, it seems insincere, inauthentic, and they don't feel you're listening.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm having a great day, but somebody walks in my office and they're about a 5, I shift down to a 5. Meet them where they're at.
Because otherwise, it's overwhelming. So key there. So let's, how do you make that shift? Let's talk about how to make that shift.
Yeah. So like one of the things I think about is I'm a pretty bubbly, outgoing person.
You are. Right? Yeah, so, Stevie, you are pretty bubbly. You are way bubbly and it's awesome being around you. Yes.
I try. And when people are feeling good, they can take my bubbliness, right? They can do it. But when I have a coworker come in, and I can just tell when they enter the room that they're feeling like a 4, right? Like it's not a good day. It's probably Monday and they're probably hungover, but whatever, right? They're coming in, they're not feeling their best. The first thing I do is drop my bubbliness. I sit down instead of stand up to greet them. Like, hey, how's it going? Instead of my, like, here, let me love on you, which is my typical thing, right? I shift down. I take my language and I go more monotone instead of my high-pitched, passionate self. Right? I shift down so that they feel like I'm with them where they're at, because here's the thing I can do as a leader. I can bring them up with me through the conversation, but I can only do that if I start where they're at. If you start high above them, you're just overwhelming them and the positivity just seems like you're Pollyanna and they don't want anything to do with it. So if you come down to their level in your tone, in your body language, then you can pull them up with you. You can get more excited and more happy with them. And then you've actually made their day better.
I think that's, first of all, can I make a t-shirt that says, take my bubbliness? Because I think you got some bubbliness to give away. You've got
take my bubbliness. I have a lot of it.
That should be your bumper sticker. Take my bubbliness. You got some bubbliness. That's awesome. So start, meet them where they're at, and then start to work your way up from there. Helping raise both of you guys, and so then as you start to raise in the conversation, right? Start to move up. And, my judgment is there, I start to really create some opportunity, right? So some creativity, solutions really happen at the higher levels, right? When I'm in those higher numbers, those 8, 9, 10s, in those numbers, I can really bring solutions and designs and ideas to every one of the situations we're working on.
Absolutely. You really need to, as leaders, we need to be in those higher numbers when we're needing to problem solve, when we're needing to brainstorm, and when we're needing to make decisions. We need to be on the upside of 5 in order to make clear, good decisions for business, right? And so, whatever you need to do to shift yourself to get there, if you need to be in that space, right? And that can be a lot of things. We can shift ourselves a lot of different ways. If we're having a bad day, you can call a friend who makes you feel better. You can take a walk outside. You can do some deep breathing. You can listen to music. You can do a lot of things to kind of pump your own self up, right? But realize that no good decision-making, brainstorming, or problem-solving happens below a 5.
That's right. It can be really disruptive.
Yeah, it can be disruptive.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right,
So, the idea of emotional intelligence is, mm-hmm. Something that we've talked about, and I really want to get into that a little bit. There's just understanding. So let's talk a little bit about what is emotional intelligence.
Yeah. So for me, it's about the ability for us to manage our own emotions, and while doing that, and I feel like it's like at the same time, which some people think it's two separate things, but I kind of feel like you got to do them at the same time. Managing our own emotions while interpreting others' communication in the right way.
All right. So managing mine. And so look, I can't always help my first thought. Right?
No.
Some reaction, some trigger will happen.
Yep. But
I can manage those second thoughts, right? So is that essentially what I'm doing is I'm the winds may change, but I'm adjusting the sails. Is that kind of that idea?
Absolutely. And I think it's about knowing yourself enough to know what your triggers are, number one, first and foremost, right? One of my favorite activities to do with a team is have them all write down their triggers and share them.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid to do that because then you're going to use them against me.
Right? But the truth is, so many of us trigger each other every day with little tiny things we could easily change.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Yes.
There's some things that trigger us that are so tiny and so small that if we could just tell people what they were, they would just stop doing it. And it would just be so much easier, right? But like, we never talk about it, right? So managing our emotions is number one, understanding what our triggers are so we can avoid them when we can, right? The second part of managing our emotions, though, is also managing how we express those emotions to other people.
Mm.
Just because I'm having a bad day doesn't mean I need to look like I'm having a bad day.
Got it.
Because sometimes that can be more destructive than actually anything you say. It's just visually, if they think you're mad at them, you've already lost the war.
Yeah.
Right?
It's an interpretation, right? They walk in, you got this like look on your face.
Yeah. Exactly. So I talk a lot in our courses about that nonverbal body language, keep that together. Right. And that is part of managing your emotions, is managing the expression of those emotions, right, to other people. So we have to be able to manage those. We have to keep those in check so that we know what other people are seeing and how they may or may not be interpreting that.
Like leaders that are close to me, in CDO group, I've got a group of leaders that I'm really, really close to. And, we've been together for a long time. There are often times where I'll start a meeting with them and say, with somebody I'm having a meeting with, and say, hey, just want to give you guys awareness. I just left a meeting. I'm carrying a little bit of that into this meeting. I just want you guys to be aware of where I'm at. Now, I've got relationships with them where I can do that. I can be vulnerable and say, hey, I just left a triggered environment. I'm gonna try to let go of it here, but just be aware that, hey, I'm walking into this meeting with you guys, with a little bit of a triggered, with some weight that I'm carrying. And, sometimes that group of people I've got such a great emotional or such a great relationship with, I have the ability to be vulnerable. Now, that doesn't work necessarily with, I can't walk into a group of superintendents and say, listen, guys, I'm a little emotional now. it doesn't usually work as well with that group.
No, you have to definitely have trust in order to vulnerably share, but that doesn't mean you can't share in other ways, right? So I am always willing to any group, even if I just met them yesterday or I'm just meeting them for the first time in this moment, I am always okay to say to somebody, you know what? It's a little cold in here. Why do I say it's a little cold in here? So that way, when I cross my arms, nobody thinks I'm upset. It's just a little cold in here. Now, could it really be that I am upset because of a previous meeting? And I know that my body language is going to do that. And so, yeah, but I could also just say it's a little cold in here. Right? Like, we have to get better at just explaining some things to people in the beginning. And it doesn't have to be vulnerable in terms of sharing insight about your soul that you don't want people to know. It just has to be clarifying what they may see from you so they know what it means. You're giving them the definition of how to interpret you. Yeah. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And if we do that every single meeting and we do that every single time, then when we do carry in this baggage, because we all got it and we all carry it. But when we do carry it in, then hopefully we can at least explain to other people something that lets them know it's not them.
That's right.
Right.
And I think that's the real.
Yeah.
That's the real value is all right, look, I'm here. There's that great book of the Book of Joy by Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama. And Desmond Tutu talks about the Dalai Lama in a way. He says, what I loved most about him was that he would be able to be in one conversation and then release that conversation and be in the next conversation and then release that conversation. And, as a leader, that's my goal, like to be able to be in each conversation anew.
And right? Do you know how to do that?
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So you have to create a trigger phrase for yourself. And every person is different. So I can share mine. I can share some that other people have used. Mine is, it's not their fault. That is my trigger phrase. So before I get on a call with you, and I did this today before I hit the button so that we could be together today, because I came from a previous meeting. And even if it wasn't a bad meeting, so it's not like I have bad things, but I had thoughts. I had things still from that meeting because we don't give ourselves any time, right? I've had a 9, a 9:30, a 10, a 10:30, and now with you, it was 11, right? So I've done 5 of these back to back with no time. So I can't process through all that. So what I do is I've created a trigger phrase for myself. So before I hit the button on this conversation, I say, it's not their fault.
That's right.
And it allows, it's a trigger phrase for me. I have used it enough that it allows me to do that, to release the previous conversation and come into this one fresh and present and new. And that's my trigger phrase. Other people have used things as simple as let it go. I have a friend who uses release and recharge as her trigger phrase. One of the leaders that I work with, who's a CEO of a large company, says CEO doesn't have to mean chief executive officer. It means chief excitement officer.
Woo! There you go.
And he uses that in between meetings so he can show up to the next meeting like, I'm the chief excitement officer. Look at me go. And he uses that to just clear that out and come fresh. And that's what he has, right? So I think we have to think about what's a trigger phrase that allows us to do exactly that, to let a conversation be over here in the compartment that it was, and let this conversation happen in the present moment without that. And it's really a lot simpler with people that you don't actually know that well and that you don't see that often. right? Really yeah. easy for yeah. me to come into this with you. You have no baggage. We have no past relationship.
That's right.
Nothing on top of that, right?
That's right.
With leaders, that can be very hard though. I'm meeting with Sally today. Well, I've known Sally for 3 years and I have 3 years of history with Sally. But here's the thing, and this is the thing I challenge leaders to think about. What if today's the day Sally is different? If you're treating Sally as the Sally of yesterday, then are you allowing new Sally to be here?
Well, there's this like sense of already always knowing. Yep. Right? This kind of like, I already know what she's going to do. I already know what she's going to, Sally's going to do. Sally's going to think. This is what Sally always does.
Fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
And is it that does, she right? would still do yeah. it? Or is it that you've made her do it?
No, it's exactly right. I say that we as leaders cause the things that are happening. We actually cause that to happen. Yeah, you know, it's easy for me to see with others. You know, I was on this job site I was talking about yesterday, and I was watching the superintendent, the way he was interacting with people. I'm like, yeah, you're causing that behavior. You're the way you're speaking to the men that are there or the people there. You're actually creating your disappointment, right? The way you speak about it, the way you create about it, the way you set up for it, the way you start the way you enter the conversation, your preparation for the conversation. You know, and you know, he was. You know, just kind of humdrumming and walking around with this kind of attitude. And, you know, he just entered the conversation not prepared. He didn't think about what he needed to talk about. You know, there was no goal. There was no goal in the conversation. And, you know, then they get triggered. And, you know, these conversations start getting sideways. And people are already tired on a construction site and overworked. And all of a sudden you got some negative stuff happening. And, you know, they get more frustrated and it kind of is like the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that happens to us all. Right. So like I try, right. Try is the operative word, not saying I'm great at it, but I do try to look at it as just because somebody acted that way yesterday does not mean they have to act that way today. Mm-hmm. And I think about that in terms of my own growth. I am not the leader I was 4 years ago. I've grown as a human. I've grown as a person, as a leader. I have new skills. I have more skills. So if the person sitting in front of me is expecting the leader of 4 years ago, they're going to be sadly disappointed, or they're going to make her appear because they're going to treat me in such a way that that's going to be my response, right? So I can't do anything about them, but what I can do is think about me and go, what if today is the day that somebody is nicer to me than they have been? I should allow them the space to be nice. Should allow them the space to be a hard worker. Should allow them the space to get this report done on time. Because I'm just expecting them to be the same person they were yesterday, then they're never going to get to grow and they're never going to get to improve.
And if I, as a, you know, I think of it this way, you know, what you're talking about, what has a resonance with it is that I feel that we walk in the same way, right? I walk in the same way, the same thing, you know, and if I want to be different, right? If I want to show up different, if I want to be able to go, okay, great. This is how things have been. Great. And I wanted to, I don't want to drag my way of being into this conversation. Yeah. Now I've got to have a break in reality, right? I've got to create some sort of break. And when I'm in that creative mode, right? If I move up to the 8, 9, 10s in that creative mode, right, I might walk in the room with a different look or a different sound or a different way of being or different preparation, right? Hey, this, I just want to start off, you know, we're going to be really busy today. We're going to go pretty quick. I just want to check and see how much time we have, make sure we got time constraints. Great. I also want to just talk about a goal that we're going to have. Great. And maybe that wasn't a way that was before, but you know, I could automatically come in and start a pattern interruption from the way that I was. Right. Yes. So I'm not bringing that in. So, you know, they go, oh, hey, what's going on with Anthony? Wow. Oh, look, he's got a break. That's something he didn't do. It was a complete pattern interruption. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a goal for the meeting and we checked in with my time. He's making sure that I have enough time for this conversation. He's respecting me. All right, great. And then just as we go along, if there's anything that I say that, you know, you don't understand, I want to try to, I may ask that I'm going to reiterate what I'm saying. I'm not asking it as stupid. I just really want to make sure that give you time to, you know, to react to what I'm saying and really check and make sure that you're understanding what I'm saying. I'm not just trying to, you know, force you to understand it. You know, so just as I enter the room, right, if I don't bring my old way of being, if I bring a pattern interruption, if I bring a you know, the billion forms of idea, things I can do that are different there, I can grow and change that dramatically in that moment, right? There's, you know, kind of, I'm bringing a billion forms of new ways of being to that moment. And even though they may have seen me one way in the past, you know, there may be some lingering chat or some suspicious or some they're actually looking for that. My judgment is that we could move that conversation forward, or that leadership skills forward, and their ability to see something completely different much quicker if I bring that through the whole conversation.
Yeah. Well, and if you pattern interrupt, it forces them to pattern interrupt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is also important, right? Like, I think so often we see an employee and we say, gosh, we wish they would do this. We wish they would do that. Why do they not understand? Right. And my first question to leaders is, what have you done differently?
Right.
Because right. if I expect them to act differently, I need to interrupt the pattern because it'll make them interrupt the pattern. Right. When I show up differently to that meeting, when I start setting those expectations, when I start clarifying time, all of a sudden they're going to see a difference. That's going to make them act differently because we're in this together. So now all of a sudden I've not only changed myself, I've now interrupted their pattern. They are now changing. They are now open to changing. And now we can grow, right? But it's yeah. not about telling them to grow if you're not doing anything different.
Well, it's the same dance we've always had. I mean, I believe we create those dance partners, right? We know it's like the tango we do. I know when you hold my hand, I mean, you're going to spin it this way. And, you know, when you have that conversation, it's going to spin. You know, we create, you know, Batman needs the Joker, right? I can't be Batman without my Joker. And I need a villain to work against. And, you know, if I walk in like Batman again, Joker will show up. But if I walk in, you know, like a, you know, maybe, you know, a different character, character would show up. So exactly. You know, I love that conversation. You're right on with that, Steve. I think that's a neat conversation there. So that's that emotional intelligence. We start to really look at, all right, what's my behaviors in there, right? Mm-hmm. How am I showing up into the conversation? How are my emotions? How are their emotions? Right? Do I have the ability to have a pattern interrupt? Let's kind of keep going down that pipeline of the, you know, maybe four or five things that you do to kind of check your emotional intelligence.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the number one thing we all have to do is set expectations, which you were just talking about, right? When you have a conversation with somebody, let's set expectations on what we're talking about and how long we're going to be here. And that is emotionally intelligent. It seems not. It seems like a communication strategy. But the truth is that that kind of clarity allows us to clarify how we feel about it. That actually keeps other emotions about other topics from coming up. If I walk into this meeting and I have no clue what we're talking about, I have all the emotions. But if I come into this meeting and all of a sudden you say, we're talking about Project X, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I feel good about Project X, so we're good. All of a sudden, all those extra emotions leave the room with expectation setting. So the first thing we all need to do is when we get into a conversation, here's what we're talking about. Here's how long we're going to be there. These are the first two things you should say in every person you meet with every conversation, because that's just going to take all the emotions and cut it down. Right.
So set the time expectation. All right. We're going to be 30 minutes and we're going to talk about these three items. And here's the goal to achieve. At the end of this, I'd like to be able to have a process for this problem, or I want to solve the solution with these change orders, or I want to fix this employee's delinquency problem. We're setting kind of level setting expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And with goals and all the things. Right. Then we got to make sure, right? The second thing we got to make sure is we listen more than we speak, right? Which we talked about earlier. If you're in an emotional state, turn your ears open and your mouth closed, because you'll have a much better conversation, right? So that's not always possible as a leader if you're leading the meeting. But if you know that you're in an emotional place where you're not making the greatest sense, or you're not having the greatest conversations, start your meeting with a lot more questions. Allow them to talk more so that you're not talking as much. So that you can kind of get in that space and get in that zone where it's going to work for you, even if you have a lower number, right? And please don't beat around the bush. Let's not talk about 50 other things to get to the most important thing. Let's just talk about the most important thing and just be real. Like, I hate when we go into conversations and I feel like there's forced 15 minute of chit chat because we're supposed to before we get to what we need to talk about. Y'all, I am a busy person. Don't waste my time. right? Like, let's just get to what we need to talk about.
Don't waste my time.
Don't waste my time. And I think it's one of these things that we think, and this is one of the things that I think leaders struggle with. We think, oh, but I'm trying to connect to my employee. I'm trying to get to know them. I'm trying to have this. Cool. I get that. But you don't need to spend half a meeting doing that. You can do that in a few quick minutes, or have one meeting a month where that's all you're doing. Let's catch up on life. Like, let's just catch up and see what we're doing. Let's like get to know, how are the kids? How's the wife? Like, let's have that conversation. But that could be totally separate from today's conversation about Project X. Like, let's just talk about Project X and get that conversation done. And here's the thing, right? Parkinson's Law, we will fill the time we are given. If you schedule the meeting for a half hour, you will feel like you have to fill it. So you will come up with other things to talk about. Don't do that. Schedule the meeting for a half hour and be very excited when it takes 5 minutes. And say, look, I am giving us both the gift of time. Here's your 25 minutes back. Here's my 25 minutes back. Let's go get some work done. Cool. Nobody has a problem with meetings ending early. They only have a problem when meetings run over. So end them early. Be okay with that. Right? Don't feel like you have to add in all this extra just to fill the time, right? Like, let's not fill the time. Let's just get to what we need to get to and stop it. And the reason why people ask me all the time, why would you say that has anything to do with emotional intelligence, right? Well, the truth is that the longer we talk, the more emotions are at play. The longer our conversation, the more likely we are to get triggered. The more we go off topic, the more likely we are to bring in baggage. So if we have shorter conversations that are focused, we actually are being more emotionally intelligent and we're keeping emotions out of the mix.
Well, I find that a lot of leaders mix that up too much, right? Yes. When we get, you know, their, you know, the difference, you know, the behavior we have with the people around in the time that we're there, right? You go in, create expectations, communicate well, you know, really establish what you're there, you know, set expectations, communicate about the parts and pieces you need to do, you know, confirm understanding of what you're trying to achieve and get out of that conversation. But after, you know, making sure that everybody has clarity, we're not rushing, but we're making sure that there's clarity, but then getting anything after that becomes minutiae and confusing and becomes a little bit of a little distracting. If not benefiting the conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then if we've set expectations, we've listened a lot, right? We've tried not to be around the bush. We're staying focused, right? We got to make sure that our body language and our facial expressions are okay, right? We got to be in alignment with that. It does nobody any good for you to tell them great job if you look angry while you're telling them great job. Yeah. They're not really hearing it. They're just seeing your face and going, they don't mean it, right? So you got to be thoughtful to how you look and in a conversation. And I always tell people, if you don't know how you look, get a friend of yours to tell you, because everybody around you knows exactly how you look. And so even if you're not aware of it, they are. So you can find somebody who can coach you on how to look the way you need to look to get through these conversations. But body language is huge. Facial expressions are huge in conversation. And if you're not actively aware of what your face and body are doing in your conversation, you're screwing it up at some point, right? And that is a part of emotional intelligence, because our emotions come across through our body language and our facial expressions. And then the last thing I always tell people to think about with emotional intelligence is empathy, right? Empathy is important. We need to have it. We don't need to have as much of it as people think that we do. There is such a thing as too much empathy. So we need to not go that far, but we do need to use it in our conversations, and we need to use it well.
You know, the last thing I want to talk on, I just want to kind of run through, because you do such a great job with empathy, right? You got one of the favorite topics you talk about is the three levels of empathy. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Give me a little bit on that.
Yeah. So quick rundown, three levels of empathy. First level, cognitive. Cognitive empathy, or sympathy a lot of times for people. Level one is all about, hey, I see that you're struggling. I'm sorry you're going through that. How can I support you? I don't need to feel it to see it, right? Yep. So cognitive empathy is just making people feel seen. I see you. I see that you're going through that. Sorry that that's happening to you. How can I support you? Level one empathy is great for 80% of our interactions. 80%. That's all you need to do is make people feel seen. Level two of empathy is emotional empathy. That's where, oh, Anthony, you're talking about this issue that you had. Oh, I've had a similar issue. Let me tell you about my issue. Let me feel it with you. Let's share in these feelings. Now, see, the thing about emotional empathy and sharing in each other's feelings is sharing makes you equal. That is great for your family. That is great for your friends. That's great for your coworkers. That is not great if you are a leader and they are a person you lead. If you are a leader and they are a person you lead, you do not want to give them all of that empathy. Because when you give them all of that empathy, they now have things they can use against you. That's right. I had an employee once, you know, who we talked about them losing their dog and I had lost my dog. And we had this whole conversation about losing dogs and oh my gosh, and we were crying and it was such a thing. And then 2 weeks later, when I wanted to call him about, hey, why didn't that thing get done? He goes, well, you know about me and my dog. I'm still getting over it. You understood. You see how they use that as ammunition against me, right? Yeah. We don't need level two empathy as a leader with our employees. All we need is level one. Level two empathy, maybe 20% of the time at work. And really level two empathy is for your coworkers. And that's it. People who are on the same level as you that you need to connect with. That's it. Level three empathy, the deepest level of empathy is compassionate, actionable empathy. And that's this, you're upset, I'm upset too. Let's go change the world. Let's take action. That's awesome. And when I'm mama bearing, or in my case, I call it mama sharking. When I mama shark my kids and things that are going on with that, yeah, sure. I can mama shark that. That's actionable, compassionate empathy. Got it. I don't need to be doing that at work. We don't need a mutiny. We don't need an anarchy. That doesn't need to happen, right? So for me, when I talk about empathy with people, I'm like, look, cognitive empathy is where it's at. Make sure people are seen. And you are doing it right. That's all you need to do. You do not need to get your own emotions involved. That's draining. It gives them too much information about you. And we don't need that at the workplace.
That's awesome. Stevie, I got to tell you, your leadership wisdom brings clarity to it. You know, look, at the places where leaders continue to grow. Like for me, having a leadership coach, having someone like yourself and that's got this, you know, clear vision of hey, look, me as a leader, where am I causing what's happening? You know, ultimately, if I stand in, if everything that's happening is my fault, right? If this is my matrix, I'm causing all that's happening here. If I stand here, right, having a coach like you that can help me see why it's happening, you know, I think that's a lot. You know, to understand that I am causing this, but sometimes I can't see my own behavior, right? I can't notice that. Hey, you got a really sourpuss look on your face and you're talking to people. Or, hey, you walk in triggered. That trigger behavior doesn't work anymore, right? Doesn't bring very much clarity. Or, hey, I've got, we're going to need to get from a 5 to a 7 to an 8 to get anything done. You know, I think, having a coach like you to do this is really the gift of practice. So let me ask you this. If people want to get a hold of you and they want to bring you on as a coach or someone that supports them, what's the best way for them to catch up with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say if you just want to learn about what we're doing and stay in the know with some of the programs and things that we offer, go to our website, empathics.net. We do monthly webinars and we do weekly email trainings and all kinds of things. So that's great. If you want to talk to me personally, the easiest way to get a hold of me is through LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn every single day. It is my favorite social media platform. I spend way too much time there. And if you find me there, I answer. I don't have a staff member who controls my LinkedIn. I do that. So it is you are talking to me directly. And I would love to meet you there. And you can find me at Stevie Dawn Carter.
I am amazed, Stevie Dawn Carter, by your wisdom. I love where you're going with this training. Folks, make sure we look up Stevie and we support all the great things that she's up to. So thank you, Stevie, for being on this podcast.
Thank you.